Welcome to Lawyer v. Lawyer, the only legal podcast giving you both sides of the trial room floor. Attorney Gary Berger represents injured people and their families, while Attorney Debbie Champion helps people and companies protect themselves against injury claims. Together, they have over 50 years of trial experience. This is Lawyer v. Lawyer.
Hi, I'm Debbie Champion.
Hey, I'm Gary Berger.
We're here today to finish up with Mediation and Strategies and Tactics, Part 2. Gary, let's just kind of shotgun it. Give me some ideas of what mediation strategies you hate or love.
We're excited to have Kim Kern, our guest on Lawyer v. Lawyer, who's going to tell us whether or not they're going to work or not, and then she'll share her brilliant strategies too. Welcome, Kim. Thanks for coming again.
Thanks, Debbie. Gary, happy to be here.
All right. So strategy-wise, it is disconcerting to a client to have me telling them how great their case is and how I'm going to kick butt for them in court and then turn around and tell them how bad their case is and why they got to settle it. So one of the things that is useful for me to have in a mediation is to have the mediator communicating from a neutral point of view why some of the defendant's positions may hold some water, may challenge a plaintiff's verdict, or may decrease damages. I need the mediator to say that. So one of my tactics for my own clients is to have that happen.
Yes, this is Kim, and I totally get that. And I practice law both on the plaintiff's side and on the defendant's side. And the plaintiffs, it is so hard for them to realize, my lawyer believes in my case, yet, wait a minute. Now my lawyer's telling me that my deposition didn't go so well? And it is really hard to do that. So I think as a good mediator, you always want to be the person I call it carrying the water, you know? I'm the mediator. Let me carry the water. I'll tell your client everything that the other side says is bad about the case, while reminding them that they have a very good lawyer who is going to do his best to argue around those weaknesses, but to be that intermediary.
What do you think?
I think that's a great, of course, I think you're exactly right.
Have you ever had mediators that don't do that? Have you had mediators where it's frustrating because they're not they're not saying how it is? Or
I don't think so.
Okay.
If I have, that's the only time I've used that mediator.
Exactly. That's my point. If you have a mediator who's not going to do that, that's one of the roles, and they got to get that.
That's right. That's right. And I think most mediators, by the time they are experienced enough to do what these guys do every day, they know they have to do that. They know that. And if they're not doing it, you got to ask them why outside the court. Outside the room.
And thank
you. Let's talk a minute about outside the room. I really like that, and I think that's an important point.
What is that, a tactic that's effective?
Yes, it's really effective. So I say to the parties, okay, well, I'm going to step out and let you guys talk. You come get me when you're ready. And that gives me an opportunity to speak to the lawyer alone outside of the presence of the client. And I many times will look at the lawyer and say, tell me what you need me. What do you need help from me doing?
Excellent.
What do you need? What can I do to help you with your client? And that way, the lawyer and I can have a talk without the client becoming suspicious. Because a lot of times the less sophisticated clients, what is this whole, I thought we were meditating. We're mediating? What's this?
Debbie, what? That's a great tactic. It's used effectively by a lot of mediators. Debbie, so I gave one. Kim gave one. Your turn.
Time.
Tell me about what do you mean by that?
I think the use of time is a great psychological tool.
You mean delay it out? What do you mean?
I don't want to delay. I just don't want to hurry. Because the plaintiff needs to think about their risk. And they aren't thinking about it until they're in that mediation room. They're not thinking about it. They just think they have a case. Guess whose problem that is? Yours. It's Gary's problem. Gary is here for me. Gary's to worry about the case. I don't worry about it. And when they're in there, it's like dripping. I always tell people, it's when you're in
Chinese
a dry
water torture.
Exactly.
You were about to say
that.
So you want to torture my client.
No. I'm going to say, imagine a dry sponge. If you pour a bunch of water on it, it just rolls off. But if you drip it, the sponge gets wet. It finally gets through the sponge. That's what you have to do with juries, and that's what you have to do with plaintiffs in mediation. So I don't delay on purpose, but I'll tell everybody, take a breath and slow down. Let's think about this for a little while. And it works.
So I do the same thing, but from a little bit different point of view. On time, let me just answer time.
Yeah.
What I do is I slow things down in my room because I want the other side to know it's really hard in my room.
Yeah.
I want the communication to be, listen, yeah, it took us 45 minutes to come down 25 grand, but the reason is because we're not going to come down much anymore, and it's really hard in this room. So there you go. So let me go. Is anything else on time? So you do that.
No.
So when you give me my first offer at 1 p.m., you're doing that on purpose for four hours.
No, I would rather give an offer early and then move slowly.
So you're giving me $5,000 and then trickling up?
Yes.
Thanks. That makes it better. I hate that. So I guess I just do time. Here's a trick. You want to tell your client that they have to play the mediator. You're not just playing the other side. You got to play the mediator. And the mediator knows that. We get it. It's not no, and I'll let Kim talk in a minute on that. But I want the client to communicate to the mediator that it's hard, that their case is important. Because I can say that, but it doesn't mean the same until you get the client saying that. Because the good, real client with a real claim, they're gonna communicate to the mediator, and the mediator's going to go, wow, this is a great case. I can put my spin on it and stuff, but simpler is better, or having the client look at the meter and saying, "Let me tell you how much I miss mom. Let me tell you how much my back hurts." And you, when you take the time to listen to your client, you get that nuance. Like, do you know I don't sleep ever? Do you know I wake up at 2 a.m. every night? Do you know I've never slept on my stomach for 4 years? Whatever. You get that nuance that really drives home the case.
Yeah.
So play the mediator. Let them know it's hard. Let the client know that they have to do that, because it can be tension-filled in your room, and you may laugh, you may joke, you may bide the time, because Debbie's taken so long to give you an offer. so you may release the tension, but when the mediator comes in, you need to game face it and tell the client, listen, I don't want to just be talking. You, I know, kind of like what Debbie said, they're relying on me. I want you to tell the mediator, you got some work to do. You got to tell that mediator so the mediator gets it. When they go in Debbie's room, they're going to say, Debbie, you better pay a lot more money, because they're going to whoop you at trial, because this plane is great. That's my point.
Yeah. Well, and if you convince the mediator your case is great, we generally pay more money.
Huh. Mm-hmm. That's good.
Because the mediator's in there convincing our person of that.
So that's a good point. All right, Kim, what do you got?
Time. I think you were absolutely right. If I see that a party has taken an exorbitant amount of time to just move, $25,000, I'll communicate that to the other side and say, look, they are really struggling in that other room to move. This is not going fast. It's tough for them. And I think time can be very effective on either side.
Do you have anything else on time?
This is kind of time.
Yep.
I learned early on. Some of the best advice I've ever gotten regarding mediation is don't leave. Never leave. Never leave, because it could always happen.
I got the opposite. But
you
go ahead.
You did?
Well, if you walk, the plaintiff's like, I pack my bag and it's ready to go and it's 4 o'clock. I'm like, listen, I'm out of here if they don't do that. So I do the opposite. Sometimes I don't walk like a baby. I'm taking my toys and going home. But maybe a little bit. Because what's the point?
I don't leave. I let them leave if they want to leave, but I don't leave. And
the
reason for that is because of something that happened years and years ago in a plaintiff's case I had. And I always use those as examples, but I had a plaintiff's commercial case. It was a commercial case, big fight with a huge defendant, and it was probably worth $75,000 max.
Shh. You can't hear if you talk soft.
Sorry. $75,000 max. And so Gene Buckley was my mediator. And we kept going back and forth all day. It was 6:30. Mr. Buckley was getting tired. And he came in and he gave us an offer. And I gave him a counter. And he left the room. And 3 seconds later, he knocked on the door. I said, Debbie, can I talk to you a minute? I said, yeah. And I went out and he said, they've offered you way more than this case is worth, right? And I said, right. And he said, why are we still here? I said, they haven't stopped. So we settled that case. It was about 8 o'clock.
Oh.
And so I don't leave till they stop offering or making demands.
It is really so true. Is you don't know where these cases are gonna go, and sometimes you need to just keep moving. If one side is moving, stay there and keep moving.
I've had that many times too. And I talk about packing my bag, but I mean, I've had that too, where you know what? They're I've had many, listen, they're still going. It may be $5,000. You guys may be going up back and forth $5,000, but what else do you got to do? And so I've had mediators talk me into staying, even though I get impatient.
All right. I've also followed lawyers out to the elevators.
You have? Is that one of your mediator tactics? You.
Well, I don't know if they're playing me, you know, out of here. Oh, I'm insulted. Playing, yeah. And they pack up their bags. And I'm like, wait, hold on. Maybe we can you know, and I truly have followed them to the elevators. I haven't yet gotten on the elevator with them and gone down to the car, but that's a possibility.
Have you ever gotten them to come back in?
I've continued discussions, you know, over the phone or by email afterwards. Right. So, yes, I think it's successful.
Sometimes you have that lightning, that match strike fury when something happens. And you feel like somebody gave me a stupid offer or they disrespected me or whatever. And if they can just stay there a few minutes, it calms down.
I've done that. I've gotten pissed.
Me too. You and I both are like that.
I chill out. And then later I go, thank God I didn't leave. Because, man, they came up with a lot more. Or they were just playing me. And they pushed my buttons. Right. They were right. And I got to not let them play me.
Right. But we calm down. Both of us calm down pretty quickly. But there are attorneys that takes a little longer to calm down. And they need to recognize that.
And so clients.
So they can just maybe take a walk. I'm going to go take a walk around the block. I'll be back.
Right.
All right. What other, anybody, who's got another tactic?
I know one I hate.
Right. I have a tactic that...
Let's come back to you, Debbie. Kim, what do you got?
Sorry, I didn't mean to.
No.
Well, it's critically important to bring the right person to the mediation.
Ooh, that's a good point.
So this is a tactic. The plaintiff needs to come to the mediation, but that's not the side that we typically struggle with. It's typically the defendants. And... you know, if you have a corporate defendant, for example, and there is insurance, then who needs to be there? The insurance adjuster? Do we need the CEO of the company? Do we need the CFO of the company? You know, is the company going to be throwing in some money in addition to insurance money? Who needs to come to the mediation? In my opinion, the decision maker needs to come to the mediation. I don't need the director of HR, who maybe is able to tell me all the facts about the termination, but ultimately was the decision maker in the termination. That is not who I need at the mediation, because this isn't a fact finding. This isn't a hearing. We're not going to determine whether this happened, you know, at 10 o'clock or at noon. So I need the person who's going to be writing the check, who's going to be saying, yes, we are going to pay to get this settled.
There's a whole psychology of mediation and being there in the room and getting it done that day and everybody ready to go do it that day. And if you have an adjuster in a cubicle in Cincinnati who doesn't care and isn't trying to make a flight and is not invested in the process, you're missing the whole opportunity. And it can be really frustrated where if my clients are there, we're doing it, and then they call someone on a phone who's really pulling the strings. It's really frustrating. It doesn't work.
Yeah, Gary, I think what I find in mediations that's so successful is we have the decision makers there present with laser focus on the dispute. And that's what you don't get if you don't have that decision maker physically present. We're able to quickly run numbers by. We're able to quickly answer questions. And that's one of the things I love about mediation is that focus on the dispute.
Okay.
I will say this, though, for insurance carriers, there are people who always have to go up. You have to sometimes go up to ask for more money. But if you have the person there who knows the most and who is the decision maker to a certain point, they're going to get a lot of credibility, they're going to get the call. And so when they make that call, the right person is talking to the right person and they can get more money. You just need the right person there.
You dovetailed into one of my tips. I'm going to give the tip that is dovetailing with that, and then I'm going to come back to you for another one.
Okay.
All right. So here's your tip. Unless they call for more authority, the plaintiff's lawyer and the mediator haven't done their job. Unless they say, this is all we're going to do, unless I get them to call for that more authority and go beyond what they plan to do, I'm not settling, because one of my hats that I wear for my clients is as a negotiator to not leave any money on the table. And it's you know, not always true, because it depends on the dynamics. But unless they're calling to ask for that more authority, then I'm not doing my job. And then that's a whole tactic there about how to get them, because then what they say is, well, I'm going to make the call, but I want to make sure it does it. So am I going to ask for 300 or 2.5 or whatever? Are you going to take that? Mm. So then I have to have then that's a whole nother tactic about how do you talk to the other side about what they're going to do. Sometimes, and I know Kim said earlier, and about having, she comes out and she wants the lawyer to come out and talk privately to her, but there's also a tactic of a lawyer-to-lawyer conversation where you tell Kim or another mediator, say, listen, is now a time to have a lawyer-to-lawyer? You go out with the lawyer and they say, listen, we're going to call, but we're only going to make one call. We're not going to call 10 times. So if we call for an extra 25 grand or whatever, is that going to do it or not? And I need to tell them to do it or not. So I need to kind of come to my number. What's my bottom line deal? And so that's my tip. Debbie, back to you.
Okay, perfect segue, because I hate the lawyer-to-lawyer conversation.
You hate that?
Oh, well, here's why I hate it. Here's why I hate it. It's always done at the wrong time. And so I'm like, there are some mediators who I will say to my client, now I like this mediator, they're a good mediator, but he's going to do something during this case which is going to drive me crazy. He's going to come in here because I'm going to say something mean to him that I wanted to say to the other side. He's not going to want to do that, and he's going to come in here and say, why don't you come tell the attorney? And so then it becomes an attorney fight. So I hate it. If I want to talk bad about the plaintiff's case in front of the other attorney, I'll do it in front of a jury.
Well, it's because you're so nice. You're so crafty.
Well, I don't know if it's crafty, but I don't ever. There would never be a time, Gary, when you called me. And you will do this. You will call and argue your case. And I just listen. I don't argue my case. I do not do it. I don't argue my case. I don't tell. And I had to learn when I was doing some family law, I had to learn you don't get any points with the judge if you're not arguing your case. So I had to learn to do that in family law.
All right, you hate
cases.
It. Got it.
Hate it.
All right.
Don't call me up to talk to the attorney.
What's your next tip?
Well, that was my worst. That was thing I hated. My next tip is don't forget the non-money issues in the case.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about that.
Always non-money issues in the case. Well, you know, sometimes, I mean, this sounds really goofy, but there are cases where an apology is important. Mm-hmm. There are cases where admission of fault is important. There are, you know, I had a drunk driver, really bad alcoholic, really in a lot of trouble emotionally in every part of his life, and he hurt a lady very badly. He had good coverage, but it wasn't enough for her because she wanted him, and he had no money. And we had, Mike Geigerman did a case, did a mediation with us, and I thought, there's not a chance this case is going to settle. And my client said, I'm going to talk to her by ourselves. I said, I'm not letting you talk to her by yourself. And he said, okay, you all can be in there, but I want you all to be quiet. Mm-hmm. And I'll start crying if I tell what he said, so I'm not going to do it. But it was the most heartfelt apology and explanation of his life.
Was he in recovery by then?
Yes, he was.
How long had he been in recovery?
2 years.
Yeah, so he's been in enough. He got his brain unpickled, and he was ready to.
He did.
And that's part of recovery is making amends.
And he said to her, "If I could do
it's his fourth step."
Well, that's a good point. One of the things he said to her was, "If I could do it, I would work the rest of my life for you to make your life better."
Oh,
it was killing me. And she was really religious, and she did not settle that day, but she thought about it overnight, settled the next day.
Wow.
Look, I'm starting to get teary-eyed because it was the most, I mean, and I felt like he was telling the truth from the bottom of his heart.
The case that Kim, I mentioned in the previous podcast, the case that Kim mediated from me, the defendant was brilliant because they brought in the CEO in the opening session. They didn't argue liability. They didn't argue anything. They looked across the table and they apologized for the death of her husband. And they said, what we have done in our hospital so that this never happens again. And that was the opening session. We didn't say anything when we walked out. And it was a long slog, but you may not remember. I found that brilliant, super effective. And that was the non-number issue.
Yeah. Well, thank you. You know, I do many brilliant things. It's funny you talk about that, Debbie. I just did a case, gosh, within the last 6 months. It was a death case. And there had been some social media going back and forth between the two sides, which made it very complicated. And But they wanted, the parties themselves wanted to talk to each other. And yeah, the lawyers, yeah, it is scary. Well, for the lawyers, what is my client going to say, you know? Which is wonderful because then that cloak of mediation, that confidentiality within the mediation protects those parties. And you know what? We got together in a conference room, so it was the five of us. Actually, I think it was six because I think one of the parties, their wife was there as well. And they had a real heart-to-heart discussion, eye-to-eye, heart-to-heart, and the case settled. And it would not have settled had we not allowed that to happen. And one of the parties asked for it. And as a mediator, I'm loath to ever suggest that. But if one party wants to do it, and of course the other side says okay, and we put some parameters on it, but it can be very effective.
All right, can I keep going?
Please,
I want to shotgun
some
more.
What do you got?
So you said the non-numbers, which reminded me about the numbers. So the other thing that was, get your numbers together before you go in.
Oh gosh.
Right?
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
I mean, you know, so you, from the plaintiff's side, what are your expenses? What other bills aren't in? What court reporter bills have you not get in? You don't want to settle the case, give your client a number, and then have $2,000 in bills trickle in. What are the liens? Have you talked about negotiating the liens? What's the Medicare? Do you have a conditional payment letter, Medicare, Medicaid? Have you started to talk about those people? Are you going to use the Illinois and Missouri lien reduction statutes? How are you going to do that? What are you going to do about, are you going to structure something? Do you have a structure guy on the plaintiff's side? The defendant will have their structure people for wherever they're using, but do you have a guy to vet the numbers there? Have you talked to your client about a structure? How are you dividing the numbers up in a death case? Is the family going to fight about stuff later? They're going to ask you about, you need to know what's your fee. Because the client wants to know, you need to tell them that if they're settling a case for a big number and they're getting a lot less in their pocket, they need to know that then. And so one of the things that I work with my staff is, we work before the mediation, but we're like, listen, let's start going on the liens. What bills have we? Because the client will go in. I just tell you, I've learned a lesson the hard way. You do that and then you get more expenses, or they have another bill they never told you about,
right?
Blah, blah, blah. So on the plaintiff's side, you got to do those numbers ahead of time, and you must hate it, Kim, if they're not ready for that.
Right.
And you've encountered that, I'm sure.
And it's not just personal injury cases. I had an employment case. I'm not making this up. The two sides could not agree how much this person earned. Now, how hard can that be?
That's weird.
Turns out, guess who was correct? The employee. The employer had the wrong number for what they were paying this guy. So we had pay stubs. I mean, I know it was crazy. They had to call back and talk to bookkeeping. And well, we were able to do it, but we probably did we're spinning our wheels for an hour just fighting over what this guy earned. That's not
crazy.
Good.
What do you have on the numbers
beforehand? Well,
you said, oh God, as soon
I
as
think
you said
exactly
that.
Right. I'll tell you, the one thing I would add to what you said about the numbers is, don't give me the new medical information a couple days before. This is a big machine, this insurance company is. They can't just look at it and go, okay, yeah, I'll add that to my evaluation. People up the line and up the line and up the line have to look at these evaluations. They've done it a few weeks before, or days before at least. Night before, I get 30,000 new in medical. And so lawyers have been mad at me because I write them back and say, I'm acknowledging that you sent this. This will not be considered in the evaluation for tomorrow's mediation. And they're mad at me for that, when they don't understand that it's a big machine that has to work.
Or if you're changing the wage loss value, or you're saying they can't
right.
work, or there's a lot
right.
of things you can't change it, that you have to do that before.
Right.
You got to
right.
do that before.
A couple weeks is fine.
All right.
Even a week.
Gary, can we talk about brackets for
what
a
are
minute?
Brackets?
Well, brackets are a mediator's tool. And what I do when we seem to be stuck, or we seem to be moving in small increments, is to say, hey, have you thought about, we'll continue to negotiate, you continue to give me a new number, but in addition to that new number, you give me a bracket. So for example, let's say you're demanding $150,000 and you're willing to go down to $140,000, and I suggest a bracket. Well, how about this? What if you will go down to $100,000, so it's a really big jump, if defendant will come up to $50,000? And that way, what you've done is, first of all, we don't have a deal, and you have not demanded 100. But you are giving, you're kind of running a flag up a flagpole to say, hey, I would be looking at a settlement of 75 more or less, you know, maybe not quite, and maybe it's closer to 100, but you're sending a signal without
when you get to the end of the day, it's about midpoints. So where is the midpoint of your number? So if I'm at 150 and they're at 50, we're playing around a midpoint of 100. And then depending how you go, you do that. So what you do is you bracket around what the midpoint would be.
Yes.
And then you're sending a signal to them. Hey, is your midpoint really 100? No, my midpoint's really 120. I'm just going down to get there because I'm impatient or I'm a bad negotiator, whatever. And the other side's going, well, listen, I'm never paying over 100. So to me, that means a case of settling for 100, right? Because you both said the number. But what you're doing a bracketing around is midpoint. So I'll joke with a mediator. They'll bring up a bracket and I'll say, okay, is the bracket 105 and 95? You know, I mean, it's like, duh, what are you doing? But bracketing's a way to, if people entrench in their position, it's a way to feel each other out. If you don't want to have, Debbie won't have the lawyer to lawyer conversation, right?
I'll have it. I'll just have an attitude about it.
Well, that's not going to be productive. So bracketing is a way to figure out midpoints. Is that fair?
Yes. And I think they can be so effective and make your mediation go faster. So I love them. I suggest them in almost every case.
I had a mediation once with USA&M and Mike Geigerman, and the whole day, all we did was brackets. No one ever did a concrete number. At the end of the day, I'm going, Mike, what are we doing? He goes, I think we're here, but let's go find out. So we found out and we settled the case. Sometimes it's easier to talk hypotheticals versus, and so to get feelings. Yeah. And that gives, sometimes that gives the adjuster on the defense side the coverage to say, well, I didn't go down to this money, but this is where we can land this case.
Because there's
stuff going on in the other room. What do you think about brackets, Debbie?
Well, I think I like brackets as long as they're not too early in the negotiations. But I think you hit a really important nail just then, which is that the adjuster may not have the authority to make a particular offer yet. And if they are in a situation where they are talking brackets, they may be able to hypothetically talk brackets, but yet not, and then call for authority later. They have to be very careful about that, but I think they can get in big trouble for talking brackets if they don't have authority for the, they might have authority for the bottom number, but they don't have it for the middle number, but they think they can get it. They're great in that situation. It doesn't work when you're too far apart.
Right.
Because you need that psychology of time. They got
to I always try to do them early on to move it along, but I never can do it.
It's too, that time hasn't taken over yet to get the people to move fast enough.
They can't, it all depends. Brackets can work early on. In certain cases, you just have to, I throw it out there and the parties say, no, can't do it. Then leave it. You know, maybe I'll come back a couple hours later. If it seems like then, maybe they will work.
Yeah.
But they are really effective, and I think you'll find good mediators are using them time after time.
I like them. Some people just shut it down.
Yeah.
Some people don't like it. I like it. Can I go to one other point I was going to make, too? And then I know we're going a little long on this episode, but I think the other thing is what Kim said, is the other tactic I do is I'll let the mediator run the show. So mediator will say, what number? Sometimes I do this, and I don't know who does this, but the mediator go, they'll ask me what number I want to go to, and I'll tell the mediator, what number do you want me to go to? Because I know I got cushion, I know I got room, and I want to say, it's a mediator that I trust, that I know, that I'll say, well, listen, what do you want me to go to? Because a mediator will look at you because they know what's going on in the room and say, listen, why don't you go down to this? Mm-hmm. It may be smaller than I thought I was going to go to. Or you may say, should I go down 50? And they'll say, and if it's a mediator who I like and I trust, they'll say, you know what, don't do that. Go down 25 and then go. So sometimes I let the mediator inform me as to the number, and I'll let the mediator suggest brackets. So you got to let your mediator do their job, and you got to give them the tools.
I completely agree. I do exactly that.
Do
you?
Particularly
with the mediator, you know well. And, you know, I can always say no, but I want to hear what he thinks.
Right. What do you think about that, Kim?
Love it. I love making suggestions, and I probably do in every mediation, and I worry the lawyer doesn't want to hear my suggestion, but I offer it. You know, hey, I can suggest a number if you'd like, but I think, you know, just mediation is all about communication. So the more you're communicating with your mediator, the more you're communicating with the other side, better chance we have to settle.
I got a couple questions that I want to thank Kim and get out of here on this episode. What, Debbie, what does the defendant get out of mediation? What does the defendant get out of mediation?
Not paying my attorney's fees to go to trial.
Okay.
Not risking paying more than what you could settle the case for. But mostly, they get this case closed and off their plate, which is a big motivator. How about you? What about the plaintiff? Other than getting a nice payday because Gary Berger represents
them. I get to get in the Lawyers Weekly. No. That's a joke. No, I get the reality of the case communicated to my client other than me is a real advantage. I get a mediator saying, listen, I get it, but look at this. This is what they're going to say. And I get the focus of the client looking at the numbers, doing a done deal. It's not pie in the sky, and they get to release the emotional energy or the frustration of the process, of what happened to them, that kind of stuff. I get someone else to talk to them about that. I get real numbers, and I get them to see that. So that's what an advantage that I get to. A mediator is going to talk the real deal of the client, so they get, because Debbie's not going to do it. Debbie is sly. She's not going to tell him till trial, and I need
not
Kim.
Not sly, just reserved.
You're sly. You're too sly to admit to it. So I got, Debbie ain't going to say it. I got to have Kim looking at my client saying, you know what Debbie's going to do to you, Trevor? When she crosses you, they're going to love her. She's going to be sweet as pie. And she's going to kill you on failing to mitigate your damages or kill you on comparative. Or that's not really I know you're saying that on wage loss, but your tax returns don't show it. Whatever the issue is, you get to talk to about it. Does that make sense?
You know, with 95% plus cases settling, you might as well mediate it and get it settled early, save some money, save the plaintiff some money, save the defense attorney money, and take some stress out of your life.
Right. Well, I wanted to thank Kim Kern from USA&M. Kim's been doing this for a long time. It's good to have a mediator who has seen both sides of the V, has the experience you do. I love that in a mediator. I just think you've been such a pleasure to talk to with us. You're so professional, but so down to earth
too. And a great resource.
A great resource. Yeah, you learn stuff. So thank you so much for spending a few episodes talking the ins and outs of mediation. I think it's been a great conversation, really educational for our listeners.
Well, thank you. I have loved talking about this. Let's do it again sometime.
That sounds great.
So they can find, it's USAM.com.
Yes.
And
yes.
Then they can find Kim. USAM does a lot of CLEs multiple times a year. I've spoken for them. I know Debbie has. They have a pretty robust website. They have, they answer questions. They have videos teaching about the process. Sometimes when we started the beginning this two episodes ago, what's a mediation? For the other lawyers, the other resource USA&M has is you can send them, your client, to the USA&M webpage, and they have videos and other things explaining the process, which is great. Mike and Rob do a great job there too. So thanks for everybody listening to Lawyer v. Lawyer.
Thanks so much. It's Debbie Champion.
And Kim Kern. Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Lawyer v. Lawyer. To get more information, suggest topics for Debbie and Gary to discuss, or hire them, email info@lawyervlawyer.com. For more episodes, visit our Lawyer v. Lawyer Facebook page or website. Although the advice is good, no attorney-client relationship is formed by listening to this podcast. Thanks for listening.